Being recorded.
Thank you, Tim. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the DESA call on the 9th of February 2012. On the call today, we have Mikey O'Connor, Cheryl Langdonald, Rafik Damak, Olivier Crépin-Leblon, Rossella Mattioli, Jacques Latour, Jörg Schweiger, Katrina Sataki, Greg Aaron, Forrest Rosen, and Takayasu Matsua. From staff, we have Julie Headland, Bart Boswinkle, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. We have apologies from Edmund Chung, Scott Aljayan, and Mark Costas. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Mikey.
Thanks, Natalie. I note that while you were calling the roll, that Jim Galvin and Forrest Rosen joined, so you can add them to the attendees. Running quickly through the agenda, we're really going to work on architecture and analysis today. We'll take a moment right at the end to update you on the meeting schedule for our meetings in Costa Rica. I'll give you a moment to add things to the agenda and or let us know about changes to your statement of interest, and then we'll get going. Anybody have either of those things that they want to talk about? Okay. We've actually got the wrong thing on the screen. Typical. Let me get the right thing on the screen. Short moment. I want to take a second. We got started on this last call and got stuck because we didn't have the folks on the call who knew the answers that we were asking to the questions we were asking. So before we dive back into the voting and analysis, I want to take just a quick second to start at the provisioning systems for the root zone. We had a little bit of a conversation about this on the list, and I think that the answer to this, I sort of looked at those questions, is that there is an automated system to provision the root that I think IANA runs. Is that right? Somebody correct me on that. And then the operators do indeed have different systems at their end for provisioning. Again, just want to make sure I'm right on that. I'm seeing, I guess it was just a... So that one is done. The next question that I want to get an answer to, we've been talking about the IANA zone in our analysis. And several people stuck their hand up, having not really been on the calls, and said, what are we talking about when we talk about the IANA zone? Because if it's indeed the same as the root zone, then that's a duplicate branch in our tree. So is there a different file that is actually the IANA zone as opposed to the root zone, or is this a duplicate? Anybody want to educate your poor co-chair on that?
So this is Jim. I'll just comment that I think it's a duplicate. I don't remember the discussion that added it there, so that would be my opinion today, unless someone has additional context. There's no such thing that I've ever heard of called the IANA zone.
That's the kind of answer I like. Anybody got a different answer than that? Because if it is, I'll cheerfully entertain the debate, but if this is really truly a duplicate, I am delighted to take it out. Oh, it's going once, twice.
Gone.
Gone. All right. Let's make it gone. Terrific. All right. That's very helpful. Now, want to then take us... Not, I'm going to briefly flash this on the screen. This is our spreadsheet where we're recording our votes, and we're soon going to get back to this spreadsheet. But I want to take you on a quick trip off to a conversation that we had amongst the co-chairs while we were preparing our update for the Costa Rica meeting, in which I'm raising this issue, but I think I have a reasonable level of agreement that we're sort of up against a difficult problem, and that is that the way we're doing this doesn't scale, and we could wind up spending a very, very, very long time analyzing a very, very, very big threat tree because of the way that we're combining the layers of the threat tree. What the methodology likes to do is it likes to take a layer of the threat tree at a time. So like threat events, threat sources, vulnerabilities, and have the group find the ones that matter. So the little one, the little threat events that have, in this case, exclamation points by them, is the way I'm depicting that. So that instead of evaluating every single branch of what could be a 1,000 permutation threat tree, we go a layer at a time and only evaluate the branches that are worrisome. It's not that we eliminate the branches, it's just that we make the choices as we go so that we don't have the threat tree explode. And I'm going to show you this in reality in just a second, because I'm going to flip back to the spreadsheet, and I've now created the spreadsheet with all the permutations that we need to evaluate by voting. And I think you'll see what I mean. I wanted to present this picture to you before I went to the spreadsheet, though, and show you why I keep on every single call worrying about this. So let me go to the spreadsheet, and I'm going to this is our familiar, we're doing one threat source at a time. We've been working on, for a long time, we worked on configuration errors. We're now nearly done with business failure of a key provider. And now I'm going to shrink the spreadsheet so that you can see the whole thing. And you can see that's the first half. That little tiny yellow gizmo right there is where we are. And now I'm going to show you the second half. You can see that we have quite a ways to go if we keep doing this pairwise comparison like we've been doing. And on top of that, now I'm going to go back to the normal scale so that you can read it. Another thing that I did is I added a new column in which I multiplied the results of our analysis on range of effects times the result of the analysis on relevance. So 100 would be big range of effect, and we've confirmed that this will happen. So that would be a big problem that we would really want to analyze. And a zero would be the opposite. It would be a minimal effect and, you know, either possible or, you know, never seen before. And what I want to call out is that for all the work that we've done, we've really only identified one worthy pair so far, which is that if there's a configuration error by a privileged user that changes a major zone file, that's going to be a big problem, and that's one that we've seen before. And so what I'm lobbying you for is the notion that what we might consider doing is finishing maybe finish the business failure one today, because we've only got a couple, three more to do. Do one more just to get, and, you know, we can quickly pick another one that we think would be a good one. And then on the next call, try to actually break this back apart and come up with a single number for each of these two kinds of things that we're evaluating, and have those numbers available on a preliminary basis for Costa Rica. I think that that chops out what otherwise will be a month or two's worth of work at a minimum, given the number of permutations that we've got in front of us. And if this was a month or two's worth of work that where we were producing a lot of things that we were likely to analyze in subsequent steps, I wouldn't be so worried about it. But I think we may be doing a month or two's worth of work. And at the end, we will say, oh, well, none of these are important. And I'm just really concerned about doing that. So that's the context. I don't want to change the way we're working right now, because I think that the work we've done is extremely useful for putting those that analysis together next week, because we can kind of look back at our votes and start to draw some, I think, pretty good conclusions. But at the same time, I'm going to continue to push back on the idea that we do every single pairwise comparison, because, you know, as now I've beaten to death, I think we're headed down a kind of a black hole with this. So that's context. Now we go to work. And if you note the place we stopped on the last call was on the threat source being a business failure of a key provider that disrupts the DNSSEC from a major provider. We fairly agreed that the range of effect could be pretty broad. But we had a pretty good dispersion on I'm highlighting the wrong thing here. Take this out. This is confusing. There. We had pretty good dispersion on the whether we've seen this before question. So I sort of want to pick up the voting right here and ask the question again. So the scale that we're going to use is the middle one, where a 10 would be, yes, we've seen a business failure of a key provider. Where we've seen the DNSSEC from a major provider disrupt it. And the examples that we were talking about last week were things like the misconfiguration, I think it was of NASA's DNSSEC that knocked out the NASA.gov subdomain. And, you know, it wound up being something that could happen. So we had a fair number of votes at the 10 end, and then we had one vote at the 1 end. So with that, off we go. And we would go ahead and sort of indicate what you think the range is, all the way from 10, which is confirmed, all the way down to 0, which is not applicable, or 1. We'll get going. Oh, I note Cheryl's comment. I'll talk to that while you're voting. Go ahead.
We'll get back to that, Mikey.
Yeah,
not
we'll
now,
get back
obviously.
To that one.
Yeah, we'll get back.
I have to kind of invent that conversation, and I don't know how it's going to be structured quite yet, but I agree. I think maybe the way we do that is we do a couple three, like we've done with this arrangement, and see if we can spot some trends. Then, if we can, go to the pruning. But I agree with you, Cheryl. I have to kind of invent how we're going to do this so that we don't do it badly. Come on, voters. I got nothing more for you. Just waiting for people to tell us whether you think this is something that's happened before. So we've seen it. Or our peers have seen it, or our partners. Okay, so we're starting to get people coming in around the 3 range. give you just a few more minutes, and then we'll move on to the next one. Line once. All right, I'm going to start recording. Two fives.
Because Mike, you had us doing relevance then, not range of effects, didn't you?
Yes, we've already done range.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, that's fine.
Yep. We're doing relevance. I'm going to clear this so that we're not quite so confused. All right, so the next one is the range of effects. So that's the scale on the left, sweeping almost all of the cyber resources of the DNS all the way down to limited. But this time what we're talking about is business failure of a key provider disrupting the DNSSEC for a TLD zone. So presumably this would be somebody who the registry for a TLD zone have a business failure, and the range of effects of that in this context. Ian? Floating in around 4, 5. Last minute voting. 2 to 6. That's the sum of the last one. No, the last one was 9. There's 9. Okay. 7, 1, and 1. Ignore the changes in colors. I finally figured out where those are coming from. They're artifacts from the way I built the file. But, you know, when the number that we type in is red, and it's the highest one, that means it's probably the same as the first one that we did, because what I did is I was copying the cell from above.
Okay.
So if it pops up that the red one is also the highest one in this go-around, that means that we're pretty consistent. And you can see, for example, that up above, there was a 7 that was highlighted red as well.
Yep.
So that's what's going on. I didn't realize that was what was happening.
I like consistency. Consistency is good.
Yeah, consistency is a good thing. Okay, so same drill. We'll clear the voting. Thanks, Natalie. Now we're on to the relevance question. Same thing. Have we seen a business failure of a key provider disrupting DNSSEC for a TLD zone? Has that ever happened? Or can we imagine it happening? Or can we imagine it happening in such a way that it would actually disrupt the DNSSEC? You know, this is sort of presuming a lot of things are happening. Go ahead and ponder that for a minute, and then tell us what you think. Close to 100% certified ICANN pure consensus for 9 voter comes in at that level. Going once, going twice. There's one person who voted and the other ones who hasn't voted yet, but I'm not going to wait for you. Okay. On to the next, which is business failure of a key provider disrupting critical DNS support files. And for those of you who forget what those are, there's the list. Hints, root-servers.net, roots public key, Resolver config files. We're not going to do the individual files. We decided we would just say if those support files got disrupted by the business failure of a key provider, what would the impact be of that? So this is, again, the range of impact question on the left that we're talking about now. Up to 8. Once, going twice on those votes, which tend to center around 3 column. That one. Okay, you can clear the gizmo. And then we'll move on to the relevant one.
Hi there.
Oh, we've got somebody that just said hi there that's not on mute. So this is the whether we have seen anything like this all the way down to conceivable, it's been described by a somewhat credible source. Or maybe not even relevant at all. And the pair that we're evaluating is business failure of a key provider disrupting critical DNS support files. Stuck at 5 out of 9. If we can get a few more in there before I Elliot. Oh, you're just dropped off and had to come back in again. Maybe that's why our number went down. Welcome back, Jurg. Okay, we're up to 7. Yeah, I think we'll call it 7 on that one. Oops, not there. I misrecorded the last one, too. This one really belongs to me.
That's better, thank you.
Oof. Okay. Next one, and last one in this group, which is, we're back to the range of impacts question. This is a business failure one again. This time the business failure disrupts the provisioning systems between the registries and the registrars, the result being that registrars can't add, change, delete zones from the TLD. Now, this one would be, I guess the scenario could be VeriSign goes out of business abruptly. That disrupts the provisioning to put subdomains in the zone. Couldn't vote on that. We're up to 7. Hanging at 7, up to 8. Getting real close. I think I'll go ahead and record that. 9. Okay, there we go. Our full tally. Cool. All right, same deal. We'll move over to the question of whether we've seen such a thing happening all the way down to being a possibility or perhaps not even applicable. Mind me, I'm just tidying up. Just wondering why my little multiplication didn't work. Okay, so we've got 8. Ping that one last straggling vote one time, and then we'll go ahead and record this. Starting with 611, starting at 5.
Thank you, Cheryl, here just before you move on to the news section.
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you. I just needed to get this off my chest at this point, particularly in those last few decision notes on the business failures of key providers. I kept thinking to myself, in the current landscape, I was very aware that my answers might be different in 3 years' time. In an expanded landscape.
I had that same thought, and I just
needed to make sure I shared it with everyone.
Yeah, no, I
just feel we need to asterisk somewhere that this is here and now analysis.
Right.
Not
and
evil gazing expanded GTLD space analysis. That's
right.
A different kettle of fish.
I think that what we have to do is, in our report, that asterisk has to be in the instructions to the people doing the ongoing maintenance of the risk assessment. Because clearly, as things change, like a whole bunch of new TLDs with a whole bunch of new providers, as soon as one of those kinds of things shows up, somebody ought to jump back into this threat tree, change that answer, and see what the impact is on the risk.
The hope is that
what we'll wind up with is a whole linked set of spreadsheets based on these, but arranged a little bit differently. So that a person could go in and say, that answer changes now. What's the impact on the bottom line risk?
Well, a small group probably would, as opposed to a person. But yeah, I think perhaps it might be just sort of penciled in on the side of a notepad somewhere. We need to pick this up in a recommendations section of the final report. Again, if we do a full blown, totally paired analysis this time. And I may argue for that yet, we wouldn't necessarily suggest that needs to be done each time. We could suggest a sort of a faster track, pardon the pun, on future analysis, but we also might want to look at periodicity and critical points which would trigger a revisit into parts of the analysis at least. All right, boss, you can move on now. I've got that off my chest.
That's a good one. And let me just capture it, because this is a good spot to put it.
I I mean, if it wasn't so heavy, Mikey, Cheryl here again, I could bring my crystal ball to Costa Rica, but it's volcanic glass, so it's a very heavy crystal ball.
Yeah. I don't think we need it.
We could try looking into the future.
I think on that one, it's pretty easy to tell what the future's going to look like. Let me add another note in another place, because I think that, oops, not that one. Here's where we can also add a note.
I don't know whether I can answer that one, but I'll...
Yeah, and if you could let me know, I've got a couple of things I want to put some money on in the stock market. I'd love some answers.
Well, because while you're making your notes and there's dead air, and I hate dead air anyway, I can tell you, when I do use a crystal ball, and I actually use it in a lecture series, believe it or not, a crystal ball is on a stand. It's a real crystal ball. And I put it up and I get people to look in the crystal ball, and there is something underneath the crystal ball that if they look properly they can see. But by putting a dollar or $2 coin at the base of the crystal ball stand, it depends totally on from where you are looking as to what you see. So people can genuinely see 1, 3, 5, 7.
Oh.
It's not about predicting the future, and that's the purpose of the tool.
That's quite delightful. Okay, we're on to a whole new category, and we've got choices at this point. Let me give you your choices as to which one you'd like to evaluate. Some of these are not like the others. So, for example, nation states doing an unintentional thing is a quite different threat source than key storage processing network failure, and these two are pretty similar, networking or operating system software failure, application software failure, those are all pretty similar. Same with, you know, we have a whole bunch of sort of infrastructure threat sources. Then we have the root scaling one, and then we have natural disasters, which are pretty similar to widespread telecom failures and power infrastructure failures. That's our list of candidates. And one kind of pruning that we could do is we could say, you know, a lot of those are fairly similar. Let's do one of each, but not do them all. And if that were the case... too high. And then this one, when we were talking about this particular threat source on the call that we put it on this list, Don Blumenthal, who was at that moment right in the midst of the SOPA debate here in the U.S., was pretty emphatic that there is no such thing as an unintentional or accidental intervention by a nation state. And so he was lobbying pretty articulately that this is an invalid threat source and that we should just remove it altogether. So before we actually dive into this one, I think we need to pick that debate back up again. I think when we were describing it, at least I was using SOPA as the example where the legislators were simply ill-informed about the impacts of the law that they were writing, and that that could be categorized as an unintentional or an accidental intervention, as opposed to a government like Egypt shutting down the the edge servers at their country as being a malicious one. So before we actually evaluate this one, I just want to take a moment to confirm that we still agree that this is one that's valid to evaluate. And I'll go ahead and start us on this in a few seconds, unless somebody throws their hand up and says, no, Don's right, there is no such thing as this. Not seeing anybody throwing their hands up, so I think we'll go ahead and evaluate this one. And then I'm sure that by the time we get done with that, if we do, we'll wrap for the day, except for the schedule. Forrest, go ahead.
Yes, Forrest Rosen. Well, what about just changing the language of the threat, saying it's an intentional action with unintended consequences?
Oh, that's an interesting idea. I could buy that. Anybody got a problem with changing it that way?
Because I tend to agree with the assessment that said action is intentional. But I would also agree that oftentimes there could be unintended consequences.
Yeah.
Naivety. Yeah.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
I was just saying, it's the naivety factor, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that really adds a lot to that description. Okay. Let's go with that. I'll change this. All right. Let's do us some voting. So, the first one is the range of effect. Sweeping all the way down to hardly any at all. If a nation state did something that accidentally disrupted a major zone file, what would the range of effect be? This is, again, the sweeping almost all of the DNS all the way down to very limited effect. Kind of.
And yet, if it was Tuvalu versus,
this is
another
the
larger
major,
nation
right,
state.
Right, this is the major zone file as opposed to the next one, which is the smaller zone file.
That's right.
So this would be,
a serious lump of,
This would be a big bite out of the of the domain name space if this happened. Sort of homing in on 5. Got 8 people there. Going once, going twice for our 9. There we go. We got 9. All right. Okay. Now we'll do the relevance one, which is the confirmed all the way down to possible. It's the scale on the middle of the bottom there, the relevance scale.
Actually, wow, that's great.
Got some dispersion there.
What the hell?
Wow.
Holy moly.
Good. I love it when they're... That's the precursor for a good conversation. Why don't we... we pause and have a conversation about that. I'll switch over and start taking me some notes here so that we've got...
Wow.
See that. copy the rest of these in too. Getting the hang of this tool. Nice tool, I like it. And free, so anybody who wants to use this tool can. Why don't we just sort of run through the folks who voted, who want to speak, and just tell us why you voted the way you did. We can get a sense of whether we need to change the wording or what. Again, don't be shy. Oh, come on. There we go. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hey, so I guess I took it from the perspective of being in Canada, right?
Yeah.
And the impact of the Canadian government doing something is less likely than other countries.
Ah, I don't think that that's the right interpretation of what we're about. I think that you need to put it in the context of, you know, I think the best example of this is still the SOPA debate in the U.S. or some of the debates in the EU, where a government, not necessarily your own government, but a government, takes an action that disrupts the DNS.
So if the U.S. government decide to block some sites in the U.S.,
no,
it's only a small portion of the planet, right?
Yeah, but what the U.S. government was getting ready to do, and many folks, including some on this call, raised their hand, they were getting ready to break DNSSEC, because what they were going to do is they were going to put essentially a man-in-the-middle attack.
Yeah, but not for... They're going to break DNSSEC for some domains, not
.com.
The entire .com. Not
yeah.
Entire .net or all of DE or all of .ca, just specific sites that were infringing specific copyright rules and stuff.
No, the problem wasn't with the blocking. The problem was the requirement that ISPs monitor the traffic, and whenever they saw the traffic going to that blocked site, change its destination. And as a result, that to DNSSEC looks like a man-in-the-middle attack. And so it was essentially putting major ISPs like, you know, AT&T or Comcast in a position of having to inspect all the traffic. You know, I'm now floating pretty deep into waters that I can't really articulate, so somebody who's smarter about this than me should say something. But it wasn't the blocking provisions, I don't think, that were really the issue. It was the mechanism by which the blocking was going to be enforced that was the problem. Greg or Jim or somebody with a brain about this, can you help me out? I'm floundering here. But I think that's the key issue. Nobody's
it seems like we're quickly getting into the realm of geopolitics, and the probability of one of the governments, and let's just arbitrarily say one of the top 10 extensions by number of domains in that zone, the stability, the rationality, for lack of a better word, of those governments, and their ability to intercede in the operations of DNS. And it's really hard to reconcile all of those factors, it seems.
I think that's probably right. But
it seems like depending on what we're focusing on, each of us as an individual, I think that's what's causing the disparity, is that we're looking at it from perhaps one or two or three different factors, but not necessarily all of us looking at all factors in the same way. And just to comment on what might explain the disparity of our ranking.
Yeah, I think that's right. I've been lax in taking notes, so I need to run back and capture Jacques' point too. get this one finished.
So let me ask this. Do we feel, and specifically, again, using the arbitrary assignment of the top 10 extensions by number of domains, and we look at the fact that some of those are GTLDs and some of those are country code extensions, does a particular government have the ability to intercede in such a way to affect the GTLD or one of the, you know, their own CCTLD? Might be the first question to ask. Do they have the ability? If they have the ability, then we can say, well, okay, what's the probability of them actually doing that? And then to one of the other members' comments, okay, so if the U.S. government does something within the U.S., does it really affect somebody in Canada? Well, you know, to your point, Mikey, it might, depending on the implementation.
Okay. Jacques, you're back in the queue. Go ahead. We've got some stuff going on in the chat, but Jacques...
I forgot to lower my hand.
So go into the chat. Bart is saying maybe ACTA is a better example. This is still on the political agenda and dealt with in a non-transparent manner. Rosella agrees with that. Greg is commenting that a government can affect the Internet in ways that are outside of their CCTLDs, for example, the U.S. Cheryl is in agreement there. One of the problems with the SOPA bill is that it would have falsified DNS responses. Yeah, that was what I was stumbling along trying to say. And now James Galvin, who actually knows what he's talking about, can go ahead.
So, this is Jim. I don't know that I necessarily know what I'm talking about, but I did want to ask a question. I think one of the things that concerns me in this discussion, has actually concerned me a few times along the way here, is the scope of the question that we're asking. Because even in this case, this comes up again. You know, certainly a nation state, a country can decide to do something that would disrupt a zone. But the question I have is, are we talking about them disrupting the zone for the rest of the Internet or disrupting the zone within their sovereign perimeter, if you will?
I think that we get to do that several times. In this particular pair, what we're talking about is a nation state doing an action that has these consequences to a major zone file. As opposed to...
So, to a major phone... When you say to a major zone file, you mean to that zone file in such a way that it affects the Internet as opposed to within the sovereign perimeter.
Correct.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, and I think that that's what this pair is saying.
Yeah.
When we evaluate it. And I think that speaks to Jacques' point as well, which is...
Yeah, because, you know... Now that I rethink this a little bit, you know, I'm inclined to think that they can't do something. It'd be very challenging, to say the least. I can't even think of an obvious thing they could do. I don't know if anyone else has something in mind where they could affect the rest of the Internet. You know, they could certainly affect within their sovereign perimeter, but no example comes to my mind as to what they could do that would affect the rest of the Internet.
That, I think, is exactly what we're voting on, is, you know, have we ever seen this happen, where one of the major zone files was disrupted by an action of a government?
Right. Now, Greg is typing in the chat room here that he can think of some ways. You know, he mentions this business of universal resolvability, but still, from my point of view, that only affects within the sovereign perimeter. What could some nation state do to .com that would affect the rest of the Internet?
Greg, are you audio impaired, or can you jump in on the conversation here? Keeping up with this typing may be tricky.
if .us, what if the U.S. government in .us decided to fragment from the tree and splinter the root?
So? I mean, I'm not sure what you mean by splinter the root, but suppose they decided to separate .us from the root? Is that what you're saying?
That's right. And say we're going to maintain our own tree, our own DNS, and it's not going to be integrated with what we traditionally know as, like what China's done, effectively, right? They splintered the root. So I don't know specifically the ICANN regulations, whether that would even be allowed, but what if we just decided to say we're going to go play in our own sandbox?
Right, but that doesn't affect the rest of the Internet is the point. It only affects within their sovereign perimeter.
The sovereign perimeter being the TLD space or the geopolitical boundary, the physical geography, right? Anyone in U.S. borders, or is it access to the .us domain, right? Subtle difference, but technically different.
And again, on this particular question,
I think you were really close to the aha moment, which is if we narrowly define or redefine this or rearticulate the meaning of this particular question, which is can a sovereign affect the actual zone?
Right.
Not the end user experience in terms of, you know, ISPs intervening and the like, but can they actually affect the zone?
Right. Because we're going to get to the one that that SOPA did when we evaluate this pair, I think.
If we parse that out and narrowly define that it might be easier for us to vote,
right.
And we might arrive at a consensus.
Yeah, I think on this one the narrowly defining thing is helping us. So I'm starting to see the value of the pairwise, and so it's for this pair that we're voting, not all conceivable cases, because presumably these other cases that we're going to take a look at, we'll have a chance to weigh in on those as well. And then one of the nice things is that at the end, we can say, okay, well, there are a bunch of them that don't have much of a score because they're either not going to have much of an effect or they're very, very unlikely. But we're probably going to unearth one or two that would have a huge effect and are reasonably likely, and those are the ones that we'll allow to graduate to the next stage. Okay, I've got a bunch of hands. Oh, Olivier hasn't had a chance to talk. Go ahead, Olivier. Yeah, you may be muted.
Thank you, Mikey. It's a bit different transcript. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. There's a small delay. Just a wild question, wild guess here. If we take the example of .NET, because root servers .NET, GTLD servers .NET, if .NET gets shut down for whatever reason it is that not likely to affect the whole Internet?
Right. I think that's the core point of this particular discussion is that we're evaluating a pretty narrow case right now that we tend to agree would have a fairly high impact or fairly high range of effects. In fact, we may want to redo that vote as well because I think we now understand what we were voting for better. Because I think that if a government accidentally did something that shut down .com, we tend to agree that that was a pretty dramatic impact.
So this is Jim again. Though there are two parts to this again. I think the point that I was trying to get to is I don't see how someone could do that.
Right. And that's why I think it's important to record both votes, is to say, well, it would have a big impact, but pretty unlikely or, pretty relevant. So, that's the value in having both of these votes, I think, is to be able to say exactly that. If somehow or another somebody could do it, it would be a dramatic impact. And the nice thing about recording this way is that, if we said just to put votes in your minds, if we said this one has a very large impact, it's a 10, and right now it's possible, but we can't think of how, and then in a year, to jump back to Cheryl's point, a government does something that accomplishes that, the sort of ongoing tenders of this analysis could plug that new value into that relevance answer and quickly find out the impact on the risk. So it's essentially a way to create a tool that could very quickly respond to changes in the risk landscape. And so if I were king and putting votes in your mouths, I would probably give this one a 10 for a range of effects, and I'd probably give it a 1 to 3 for the relevance because of the point you're making, Jim. It's kind of a stretch to imagine how they could do it. But let's go ahead and let's re-vote both of these. So, Natalie, why don't you go ahead? I hate to throw everybody's vote away, but I think we've had a pretty good clarifying discussion. And so let's vote. We'll go back to range of effects first. And again, the question is, ignoring whether this is conceivable or not, what would the effect be? What would the range of effect be if a government did something that shut down ComNet UKDE, you know, one of the major zones? Go ahead and collect those votes.
And Mikey, I just want to point out that we're at the top of the hour here.
Oh,
and
yes, sir. Thank you.
I know that I have a hard stop here.
Yeah, thank you very much. We'll collect these and call it a day, and we'll do the schedule later. The big schedule announcement is, while you're finishing up your voting, is that our meetings will once again concentrate on Thursday. They'll start early in the morning with the SSRRT group and range all the way to our meeting, which is in the middle of the day on Thursday. And I think it wraps up at 13:30 in the afternoon, is my hazy memory. And we'll go into detail on that. We're up to 9 votes. It's the top of the hour in 3 seconds, so we'll let you all go. Have a great week. We'll see you next
week. Mikey?
Yes, sir.
Just want to point out Greg's comment about an agenda item for next meeting in the chat room. Wanted to make sure you didn't miss that.
Oh, thank you, sir. I will add that to the notes. Anything else? Any last-minute pearls like that one that I'm missing because I'm scrambling because I forgot to watch the clock again? Okay. We'll call it a day. Thanks, all. See you in a week.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you, Tim. You're in. I'll stop the recording.